Hi, I'm Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight. We have a wonderful guest, and tonight we're going to talk about something that is a passion to my heart because I have one, a young boy. So we're going to talk about Cynthia Gill and Pam Withers' new book, Jumpstartin' Boys, How to Help Your Reluctant Learner Find Success in School and Life. And this is, I guess I have to admit that I found this book because I was struggling a little bit, making sure I was doing the right thing for my son. So welcome, Cynthia, and thanks for taking the time to come on with us tonight.
Oh, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here. Very glad.
So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and where we can find you and get copies of your book. Give us your website and how people can contact you.
All righty. I'm a family therapist. I used to be a high school teacher, taught high school for 25 years, and now I'm a therapist working with families and people from ages 5 to 105, I guess. My website is www.cynthiagill.info, and our book is available on Amazon, or you could buy it right from the publisher, Viva Editions.
I thought you were finished. That's all right. And tell us who Pam is.
Okay, Pam is my sister. The two of us work together on this book. She is actually a very quite well-known children's author. She's written 16 books, fiction books, primarily for boys because they're very exciting. They're very adventurous, and boys like her books. So her website is pamwithers.com, and it's W-I-T-H-E-R-S. She right now is out of the country, so.
I guess I keep interrupting him. Sorry, I guess there's a little tiny delay. I don't know why. So mm-hmm. I know there must be a story about why you guys wrote this book together.
There definitely is. We both have sons, and about three years ago, we were riding together to a funeral, 6 hours in the car, trapped together. So we thought, what do you talk about? Well, one thing we have in common is a passion to help boys succeed. So she jokingly said, "Hey, we should write a book about this." And I ever so naively said, "Sure, let's do it." So that began our journey. We thought it would take 8 months. It took closer to a year and a half, and it actually brought us closer together. We found that we complement each other quite well, her with her fiction and very good writing skills, and me with the training I've had in psychology and education and so on. So we worked together it was a very interesting time.
So how did you pick the topic of boys? Do you both have boys?
Yes, I have three sons, and she has one son. And we both have noticed that the trend in modern-day times is for the boys to be less successful in the academic arena than the girls.
And why do you think that is?
Well, we have a number of reasons that we have outlined for this to be. And we're talking primarily about reading and writing here. We're not saying that boys are the new underdogs. We are just saying that in reading and writing, they are behind. But we have outlined several reasons for this. Would you like me just to go for it and listen for you?
That would be great.
Okay. There is a brain lag in boy development. And I think people realize that when they're 4 years old or 5 years old, but I'm not sure they realize that all throughout elementary school. The boys are a little bit behind in the ability to handle words. And so the expectation is that they will be at the same level as the girls, and they aren't always. Another reason that boys are underachieving is there's a lack of male role models. Only 17% of teachers in the elementary school are males, and there are many boys who don't have a male involved in their lives. Another reason is that there's a growing disdain and fear even for the things that boys like to read and write about. Boys like to read and write about adventure, and that would include war, heroes, sword play, weapons, fighting, those types of things. And people are fearful of that, especially, I believe, especially female teachers and so on. And then what happens is the boys get discouraged because they aren't interested in reading and writing about other things. I think that there is some overemphasis on self-esteem, which is breeding insecurity and a sense of entitlement. A little bit of overprotection, which causes the kids not to develop independence.
So I have a question here. So if we don't talk about and what you say, I'm not trying to hear debunk you, okay? Because I think it makes a lot of sense. But I didn't think about it until I read it in your book. So if we're not talking about self-esteem, what are we talking about? What do we need to talk about? I mean, what do we need to get them to read about if we're not getting them to read that?
I think that there's a false idea of self-esteem. I think some people think self-esteem means to flatter a child and say and have, you know, praise them for whatever they do and tell them they're real talented and all that. And I think that that's not real self-esteem building. That's kind of a false one. And what they need is to be encouraged to, like, do more effort, work hard, and then they'll get a sense that it's true self-esteem.
It made a lot of sense to me when I read it. And it also made a lot of sense about, and I have to admit this, and I hate to do it, but I'm one of those really controlling mothers because I just had something happen to my older boy when he was young, and it made me grow up and be this really controlling mother hen. So my youngest boy, who's 14, I have three kids, is willful. And so we battle about the things he wants to read. And when I read what you let them read more what they want to read rather than what you want to force them to read, it made so much sense. It, like, knocked me in the head.
Well, that's very courageous of you to admit that in front of everybody like this, I must say.
Well, that's what my show's about. I hate to tell you all the things that I've admitted on this show. Anyway, so I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead and tell us the reasons why our sons are falling down. And then I'd like for you to talk about the seven ways to help them come back around.
All righty. Yeah, I think I went through most of them here. Sometimes parents overschedule them so they don't have any free time to nurture creativity. And I also think that screen time robs them of ability to be creative and also to interact with others, which they need to do to develop. So those are just some of the negative things there.
So if I have, and like I said, my boy's 14, and he got an Xbox last year. And I think it was I hate it more than any present that I've ever gotten him. But everybody else got one, and so we were dragons because we wouldn't get him one for so long. And as you can guess, he is now glued to that screen. He's 14. How do we get him to stop and do something else without being in terror?
I think it would be good to, do you have some guidelines for him on those?
Fallen, you know, we have a bedtime, and we have some guidelines that we struggle to implement, but it's, you know, as you know, he's probably gotten addicted in that amount of time, so we kind of go back and forth quite a bit about it. We're struggling. So what can you give us some things that you recommend for them to read so maybe we can all go out and get something?
Yeah, I think that the kids could, you could set up a program with him where he could earn some screen time. You know, where he would maybe do some reading to earn, like if he reads an hour, he could have half an hour of screen time or something like that.
And what kind of things would I get for a 14-year-old boy?
Well, boys like adventure. They like pictures. So have him select, can he go with you to select? That would be awesome. Pictures, adventures, books with a male protagonist who is, you know, going to, you know, overcome and win. Sometimes magazines related to a hobby or a special interest can kickstart, you know, his reading interest. Make sure that it's not too difficult of a book.
Could you recommend some for me? My show focuses on science and medicine, so that's what I read, cutting edge science and medicine. When I go to the store to buy my child a book, I spend hours there looking around, and I want to buy him something, you know, that attracts my intellect. Obviously, that's not going to attract his. And I spend all this time looking at the outsides of the book spine and never come home with anything. Can you recommend any?
Mm-hmm. Well, usually one of the guy's favorite fiction book authors is Jack London. He wrote Call of the Wild and some of those books.
Oh, that's a great one. And what about your sisters? What age group does her book target?
You know, a 14-year-old would love her books. She's written Raging River, and you can go online and find all her books very easily. Just Google her name. And then pick a sport that he might like. Does he like the idea of kayaking? Does he like mountain biking? There's one on rollerboarding. They went down a mountain. You know, there's just tons of really mountain climbing, a very high adventure. In fact, she used to call her books the Take It to the Extreme series because it was extreme sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the main characters are guys. So that'd be a good choice.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So talk to us a little bit about the importance of math, science, and underachievement in those areas with boys. Tell us what you've learned about that and how we can help our child do better there.
In math and science?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have a chapter on that in there. It used to be that boys were ahead of girls in math and science, and there was kind of an outcry that, hey, we need to get our girls caught up in science, which is admirable and true, and I'm certainly all for that. So we rallied and we closed the gap so that girls and boys are equal in math now, and boys are only slightly ahead in science. However, if you compare it with the world overall, both girls and boys are behind in science. So we do need to pay attention to this. That, you know, if we're competing with people from India and China and Japan and, you know, Europe and places like that. So it is important to be focusing on science. I think science is a great way to get boys to read because a lot of them are fascinated by something like, you know, anything from lizards to astronomy, you know.
Mm-hmm. I do. So what do we do to, can you tell us some stories of some of the kids that you've worked with?
Yeah, I had one story of a boy who was an underachiever in school. He was one of my students when I was teaching high school. Wasn't really very interested in schoolwork, just kind of did the minimum to get by. And one of the subjects I taught was history. So I always would assign the kids in the spring a research paper on, and I gave them a variety of topics they could choose from. But it usually had to do with 20th century topics. Well, the boys' favorite topics were things like spies and tanks and battles and generals and things like that in different wars. And this particular boy chose the underground resistance movement in Eastern Europe during World War II. And it turned out his heritage, I believe his great-grandfather, was from that region of the world. This boy became fascinated in reading about things that went on during World War II in the country that his great-grandfather was from. And he produced a marvelous paper, and it really turned around his academic performance in school. He wrote, at the end of the year, we had a I always would give the kids evaluation forms to fill out. And he wrote, assign more big research papers. Now, how many boys do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really think it was because he found something that was interesting to him. Not only was he fascinated in resistance movements and underground type of things, but it also had to do with his identity, his own, you know, relatives. So that was a very encouraging example. I actually saw a lot of boys blossom when they were writing about exciting things, the things that excited them in those classes.
So well, what is one of the things that, if you have a child that you know this child is smart, but he's mm-hmm. not performing, what are some things that we can do to manipulate that and make it better?
Mm-hmm.
Or what are some of the problems that we may not be aware of?
Well, you know, one of the things that we talk about in the book is the need for male role models. If you can find some male in his life that would engage him talking about books, take him to the bookstore, and he could see that guy reads and discussing it, that's going to make a big difference for him if he has a relationship with this guy, you know?
Does it matter that he's already, you know, a teenager like mine?
No. The teenagers are very, very, they're searching. I think they're searching for their identity as a male. And I think a lot of teenage boys are just hungry for attention by some more mature guy who would take an interest in them. So your kid's at a prime age to have that happen.
So he's not already ingrained in disconnection. I mean, my kid's a sweet boy, okay? I'm not saying that mm-hmm. my kid's mm-hmm. all these things. I can just use my child and all the people all the kids that he knows to be able to draw questions. I don't want to give the wrong impression about my boy. He's a sweet boy.
No, and you know, there are so many boys like that at that age. And I do believe that a male reading buddy would be a good idea. Reading buddy is the second thing. Male role model is the first one. A reading buddy is a good idea to have him mentor a younger kid reading to them or having that kid read to him. And that's going to make him feel really important because the younger boy would look up to him and, you know, tell him you want him to read to that boy or have that boy read to him for 15, 20 minutes a day. In fact, what you could do is, let's say he spends half an hour with a younger person, you know, a neighbor or somebody else that you could find. And if he spends 30 minutes with that guy reading to him or having him read to him, then he could then earn some screen time that way. You see? I think
really
there's creative ways. There's creative ways to have the kids earn screen time. You could have him, you know, do other things too. I think it's important to encourage, like, service projects. If he could, you know, help out, maybe he could help out at an animal shelter or, you know, helping with
mm-hmm.
homeless shelters or things like that. Those types of things are, and then he can earn screen time that way, see? But you're also exposing him to more experiences.
Good. I found that your chapter, when you're talking about dads and other alpha males, you refer to this woman, Jean Twenge, and you talk mm-hmm. about her, the narcissism epidemic. And then
yes.
you talk about some of her findings. I found that very interesting. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think she does a good job identifying why so many children, so many kids are falling into this attitude of self-absorption, which is another way of saying narcissism and entitlement. I think that she does an excellent job on that. But one of the reasons is that parents are they hover too much, and they rescue their kids. They don't let their kids solve their own problems and challenge them to do hard things, you know?
Can you talk about what, because I just think that's really interesting. You talk about some of her findings, I'm the only important person, talking
mm-hmm.
about the students who have lots of money, thinking
mm-hmm.
that money was extremely important. Can you just talk about all those things in Kevin Lehman's book, How a New Kid by Friday? How do you do that? And what is the importance of that?
Yeah. Well, I can't do it in just a few minutes. In a couple minutes here, I'll give you a couple.
We have 40 minutes to fill the air with. So you can
talk.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, I'll talk about Jean Twenge because I think she has a good, like I said, a way of identifying the problem here with the kids who are self-absorbed. And I really do think that we're looking at a time when parents are very anxious. They're more anxious than they used to be. And because of that, they tend to be overly controlling and the fearfulness that they have causes them not to allow the kids to solve their own problems. That's what I said. I do think that what we need to do is not praise our kid for things like being smart or talented. Instead, praise them for hard work and effort and determination. Like if my kid gets an A, I would say, okay, it's good that you got an A, and I am so pleased that you're working hard. Okay? Or if they make a soccer goal, we usually praise him like crazy for making a soccer goal, but I'd rather praise him for the teamwork that he showed and the determination, you know, the fact that he worked with the team to get that goal. You see what I mean? That's going to be a different focus than saying, oh, you're so talented and all that.
That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. I think that we need to read to the kids more, even after they can read on their own. I read to my kids all the way through when they were seniors in high school. I was still reading to them when they were 18, you know. And
that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, even 15 minutes, a day is going to make a difference. And you can read things to them that are harder than they can read, which is good. But let them pick out some of the books. That's important. I think it's important for them to, I talked about the male role models already. But I think one way that we can help kids to develop, too, is to give them the opportunity to solve problems. You know who does a really good job explaining this is Parenting Teens with Love and Logic, Jim Fay and Foster Klein. Their book is in our list of recommended books. They talk about, instead of saying, like, let's say the kid needs he forgets to tell you that he needs his soccer jersey clean for tomorrow. So at 10 o'clock at night, he's going, Mom, I need my soccer jersey by tomorrow. Now, usually what we do is we just kind of roll our eyes and go, oh, why didn't you tell me? And then we take the soccer jersey and we wash it and we stay up till midnight so that he'll have it in the morning, right? Now, that's called rescuing him. Now, what we need to do is not rescue him. We need to say, now, didn't you and I agree that if you needed me to do laundry, you would get it into the laundry room on a certain day? And then the kid would go, yeah, but. And then you go, okay, well, how are you going to solve this problem of your needing your soccer jersey by tomorrow? And then he might say, well, I don't know. You just need to wash it for me. And so, but then don't give in. Don't get sucked into his drama. You could say something like, well, would you like to know what some kids do when they are faced with a problem like this? So he goes, fine. You know, but see, then what you've done is you've asked his permission to give him advice. So then you say something like, well, some kids would just wear it dirty and live with it. Some kids would wash it out themselves. Or some kids might pay somebody else to wash it. Which of those three do you think you'd like to do? Or would you like to do one of those three? But you see, all of those three puts the responsibility on him. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And it also causes him to be thinking how he can solve the problem instead of expecting you to solve the problem for him. So I really
guilty.
Like that approach. What? What?
I'm guilty.
Well, we all are. I mean, all of us, we all parent. We all can grow in the area of parenting. I don't think there's anyone who would not recognize himself in this. But what I'm saying is that there are creative ways to help the kids take more responsibility. And I haven't found any books. I think Love and Logic books are probably my favorite for explaining so clearly some techniques for this, where you ask your kid, now, how are you going to solve that problem? Or how can we solve this problem together? instead of allowing ourselves to solve it for them, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, anyway, that's an example of what I think is needed is, you know, parenting, just changing our parenting techniques. And part of it's just a skill. Parenting is a skill just like any skill. You know, if we learn how to play the piano, we have to have instruction and practice, and it's the same with parenting. But these are effective ways to get the kids to take more responsibility.
So how do you, maybe if you could give a little bit of advice on the difference between parenting for a boy versus parenting for a school when you're, I mean, a girl, when you're trying to get them to do better at school.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yep. Well, boys have a few things different about them, as we know. One of it is that their brain has less white matter in it, which causes them to be slower in the area of dealing with words and understanding emotions. Girls are very quick to be able to identify emotions, and they use a lot more words and more easily than boys. In fact, I believe that females in an average day will speak, one study said 30,000 words, and the average male speaks about 6,000 words. Now, I have no trouble believing that at all. But anyway, I think if we want to help our guys, we need to recognize that they're going to use fewer words. We need to not interpret one-word answers or delayed responses as defiance. I've even done this myself, where I'd said, why do you just say one word? Why don't you, or why don't you answer right away? Well, their brain is slower in processing, so we need to recognize that. I think that we need to allow them to not, or to save face. Boys more than girls are reluctant, I think, to be ashamed in front of people, to be embarrassed. So they put on this bravado. They'll say, oh, yeah, I got it, you know, or I'm fine. And that's a wall to hide insecurity or failure or whatever. In fact, they even did a study. There were a whole bunch of boys that said they were doing fine when they were really failing, a much higher percentage than girls. So it's important for us to accept that they are going to be trying to hide their, you know, their mistakes. I know one teacher friend that I interviewed when we were writing the book said that she had boy students that were struggling with reading, and so she would try to get them to go out for tutoring, and they were just horrified to be embarrassed in front of the class to go out for tutoring. So that didn't work at all. But what did work was when she brought in younger kids for everybody to tutor themselves, and then her boy students flourished because then they felt good about themselves. Now, this isn't always true with girls. Sometimes girls are a little bit more willing to admit their mistakes, they're a little bit more, you know, they just aren't quite so having to have that bravado in front of them that the guys do. The boys just seem very, very worried about their feeling inferior. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of ways that come to mind.
Go ahead.
Nope.
I thought you were finished. So how do you tell the difference between a learning disability and lack of motivation?
Well, that's a tricky one, and that could require some testing by experts to do that. I think sometimes it's a combination of both, because the kid is so discouraged when they don't have, when they haven't been able to keep up with the class, so then they lose their motivation and they're struggling with a disability. But the motivation piece we can always work with if we can do some of these things, like, you know, getting a male role model, getting a reading buddy, and, you know, these types of things, helping them, let them choose their own books, and let them fidget and play with things while you read to them and things like that. Let them do more kinesthetic. That's another one you asked about, the difference between girls and boys, the kinesthetic learning, where they do things with their hands and you know, create things or do acting on putting on costumes and acting out their book report instead of writing it all and stuff like that.
So schools allow you to do that today?
You know, there are schools. In fact, when I taught, the English teacher right across the hall, she had those kids acting out stories all the time. They even acted out Hamlet and all kinds of things. But yeah, they did. And I did that when I taught history. My kids, I had one kid who made a model of something out of styrofoam. And he put it all together with his hands, and he knew more about that structure and what it represented because he did that than if he would have written a paper on it, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's a great thing.
Teachers can do that, and parents can do that. Parents can even, there's also a section in a book on how parents can talk to their teacher, you know, do's and don'ts of dealing with your son's schools.
Tell us about that. Everybody needs that help, I know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's important that we don't go in to talk to the teacher kind of where we're going to be aggressive with both guns blazing kind of thing. We need to really recognize that there's a lot out of the teacher's control. And we need to affirm the teachers, you know, not come in as a whiny parent who's micromanaging and demanding and so on, because then the teachers are already going to get defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to ask your teachers, your son's teacher, for advice on library books that could supplement some of his reading that he might enjoy. And, you know, develop a positive relationship with the teachers so that when you contact them, they won't only be expecting criticism. You know, you can compliment them on things that they're doing right, and thank them for what they're doing. Don't come across as a know-it-all, but offer to volunteer as much as you can. Don't blame the teacher, and then ask. You can ask if there's a way that, you know, your son could do some more creative things, like a kinesthetic activity or something like that. Or
yeah, he comes home using that word that they said he was that several years ago. He came home using
mm-hmm.
that word.
Oh, kinesthetic learner.
I think they must do that in my child's school, but I'd never heard of it until him. So I don't
mm-hmm.
know if other parents know about that or not.
Mm.
So could you talk a little bit about parenting by type of intelligence?
Yeah, the it's actually fairly widely known, I think, the three types of learners, the auditory, the visual, and the kinesthetic. There's the kinesthetic, the kids need to move. And it always just horrifies me when I hear of people cutting recess and gym or taking away recess or not letting them have breaks and things like that, because they need that. And kinesthetic kids need that more, and boys need it more. I mean, they would so much rather be out climbing a tree than sitting in their seat. You know, and the teachers need to understand that. So
mm-hmm.
they need to let the kids get up and walk around and maybe work in groups on group projects and use their hands to do things whenever possible. And I think it's more possible than we realize.
Well, you talk about verbal, linguistic, musical, rhythmic, mathematical, logical, visual, spatial. Could you talk about what are those things?
Yeah, the multiple intelligences. Yeah,
yes.
There are actually some schools that are designed around the multiple intelligences, where they will take an inventory when the kid comes to the school to find out what they're strong in so that they can help them have a personalized learning program. These are charter schools or private schools. A lot of charter schools are popping up all around. So, yeah, the kinesthetic learners, these are kids who don't fit the mold. See, the kids who get straight A's in school tend to be the verbal, linguistic, and maybe the math learners. And then a lot of the other ones who are strong in the other parts of the intelligences don't do well in our school system. So there are alternatives for that. Like I said, everything from charter schools, a section on homeschooling in there, or even just supplementing the schoolwork with kinesthetic things. You know, have him do things with his hands in any way you can. And there are creative ways to come up with that, you know.
No, can you tell us? Because, I mean, that's not the way I learned when I was growing up, and I'm sure most people my age, I'm 54, did not have that opportunity. So how would that be?
Mm-hmm.
How would they learn? I mean, how do you get, what would you ask a teacher for?
Mm-hmm. Well, you could ask a teacher if there's a way that the kid could, I mean, for a real simple, a real basic thing, would be to ask him if the kid could have a chance to get up and walk around more often than he is already. Like, let's say the teacher expects him to sit in the seat for 40 minutes. You say, is there a way that he could get up and do something in 20 minutes? Even just go to a different, another section of the room or a learning station. I'm thinking also of doing things like my students, and I remember I taught high school, so I had 10th, I had 9th, 10th, and 11th graders, and some 12th graders, and the kids would love it if they could take a pair of scissors and cut strips of paper to write things on. And that just the act of taking the scissors and cutting strips of paper to put things on was helpful to them, because then they weren't just sitting and trying to be passive, or forced to be passive, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You could have them illustrate things. Ask the teacher if the kids could, when they write a note down, let's say they have to write some material down they're learning in science or history or something, could they illustrate it on a little piece of paper to help them learn it? Some kids would be helpful for them. Doodling, mm-hmm. stress balls in their hands. More and more teachers are realizing that the kids need stress balls. They need to doodle. They need to fidget. And I actually think that there's greater understanding now about this than there was 10 or 20 years ago. So.
Okay. So let's see. Learning disabilities. What are the most common issues that affect a child's ability to read and write?
Well, probably one of the most common, and I believe it's actually overdiagnosed, and that's ADD or ADHD. And I tend to think it's overdiagnosed, and because it mimics anxiety quite a bit. So that would probably be the top one, and boys way outnumber girls in how many are diagnosed with that. But a lot of them are anxious because they don't have enough attention from their parents. Did you like the story in there about the boy whose dad was a truck driver? And his teacher told his dad that he had ADD, attention deficit disorder. Well, the truck driver guy, he didn't know what that meant. He didn't know what that meant. So he thought it meant he needed to spend more time paying attention to his son. So he decided to take his son on his route every morning before school in his truck, and then he'd pick him up and take him on the route after school in his truck. And within a month or two, the kid's ADD disappeared. He suddenly was much better. Now, that is a classic example of the kid needing attention from his dad. And he got it. And that's one of my mm-hmm. favorite stories. Isn't that something?
That's a great story. Can you tell us more? And people love stories.
Yeah. Well, I'm not an expert on learning disabilities. I know they exist, and I know that there are ways to have accommodations for them in the schools, and a lot of teachers are willing and able to make accommodations for them. But I do think that my area of expertise is the encouragement factor, the motivation to help the kid feel better about himself, and that most often happens when there's someone involved in his life. It even only takes one person who can be that role model, who can be that interested person that will invest in him. You know, that's why we mentioned in their boys and girls clubs, you know, a stepdad, an uncle, a grandpa, a dad, a big brother, a neighbor person, you know, these type of people who can, a coach, who can just spend some time taking interest in that kid. And that's going to help him to see himself differently. And when he can see himself differently, he's going to do better. So I'm a real proponent of that, of relationships. You see.
What recommendation do you have for children to enhance their relationship that they have with their teacher? You know, if they're not the teacher's pet, how do they make their relationship better?
Well, that's it might not happen, for one thing, because some teachers are overwhelmed. I mean, it would be wonderful if the teachers had the time to focus on every kid, but they don't. Now, I think they could try. They could. Usually, a teacher will pay attention to a kid. I remember when I was teaching, if a parent contacted me and talked to me and gave me some additional insight into this child, that really helped me in my relationship with the child, because maybe I didn't know some of the stuff that was going on at home or some of the stuff that the child had said or what he, you know. And so a lot of times the parent talking to the teacher and, you know, and telling him or her about their child can be helpful as a start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think social skills with the kids is good, too, teaching them conversation starters and how to be respectful. I don't think we emphasize character development enough with our kids. I'm talking about respect and patience and honesty and those types of things. We focus too much on entertainment and not enough on those. So I have seen kids grow tremendously when parents and others began to focus more on, you know, really teaching them those types of things. And the best way to teach them is by asking them questions and telling them stories. Sometimes we can tell our kids stories of mistakes we made when we were growing up, like the time I told a lie and I got in trouble, or, you know, things like that. And then asking questions. That's like the love and logic approach, where you ask what and how questions. Like, what do you think your teacher, like, let's say the kid comes home and he's complaining about his teacher because the teacher didn't criticized his writing because there was no paragraphs in it. I've had that happen. Okay, so the kid had no paragraphs in his whole paper. So the teacher criticizes. The kid comes home and he's mad. So you could ask him, well, now, what do you think the teacher wants for you? Do you think the teacher, you know, how can we solve this problem? How can you grow from this? You know, and then another one, wouldn't you like, a few years from now when you're all grown up, wouldn't you like people to really respect you? Are they going to respect you if you are, you know, dishonest or disrespectful or cheating or whatever you're trying to help him with? You know, but instead instill some pride in him, like, you know, you're going to be a young man that people look up to and admire. And people admire ones who are courageous, and use the word courage, who are courageous, you know, or courageous enough to admit when they've made a mistake, or courageous enough to ask for help. Those are things that boys struggle with, I think, asking for help and admitting when they make mistakes.
Well, if you could say anything at all to parents, what would be the single most important thing that you can tell them?
Nurture relationship with your kid. It'd be hard for me to say just one thing. I would also focus.
How would you do that? Personally, one of the things I talk about when I say nurture is stop texting your child and put your arms around him. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
So how do you tell parents, how would you recommend parents to best nurture their child?
Well, the parents need to turn off their own screens. You know, if you're talking to your child and if you want to engage your child in a conversation, and your cell phone rings and you answer that phone, you are telling your child that that's more important. But if you don't answer that phone when you're engaged in a conversation with your child, you are telling that child that he is more important. And that's a huge one. Another one is to enter their world. Ask them questions about things. You know, find out what, you know, find out about this Xbox game. Tell me, how do you go to the next level, you know? Or ask them about, you know, you want them to be thinking about who their heroes are and find out who they'd like to be like when they grow up. And, you know, I mean, really find out what's going on in their world, I think, is real important. But in order to do that, we need to learn how to be good listeners. We have a little acrostic in our book, L-O-V-E, and that stands for listening. The first one, I think parents don't listen enough. You know, we're too busy planning how we're going to argue with our kids sometimes when they say things we don't agree with, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't really listen to them many times. And the O is for order, where we don't want the kids to run the show. Too many parents, it's just too hard, so they just give in and let the kid have their way. And that's not orderly. That's chaotic, because then the kid thinks that they're in charge. And the V is for voice. We want to have the child have some voice whenever it's possible for them to make some choices. Give them the choices, or have them have input. And you don't have to do what they say, but at least let them express themselves. You know, because you want them to learn to think and learn to express their opinion, and that's their voice. And then the E, there's two things for the E can stand for. One is empathy, where you really, you know, learn how to empathize with them. If they're having a rough day at school, even if they're blaming the teacher and blaming everybody else, saying something like, I can hear that you're really frustrated and you're really discouraged, you know. And then the other E is encouragement. You want encouragement, and that's not the same as flattery now, where we're saying, oh, you're so talented and all that. That's not encouragement. But encouragement is something like saying, you know what, I know this is hard for you to, like, say, I know it's hard for you not to be able to have unlimited screen time, but I am confident that you're gonna rise to the occasion. Or let's say they have a consequence for something, like let's say they didn't get their chores done, so then they have to do some extra chores to make up for it, and so they're all upset. You can say, you know, I know this is hard for you to have a consequence like this, but I am confident that you're going to remember this, and you're going to become a young man that others respect, because you're going to be so responsible and hardworking, and I'm sure you're going to learn from this, and tomorrow it's going to be better. You know, you see, that's the kind of a stance we want to have, more positive. When we correct them with some type of positive attitude in it. Does that make sense?
It's wonderful advice. Thank you. So tell us one more time before we end tonight where we can find you and your beautiful book.
Okay, you can get our book on Amazon with no problem at all. And my website is www.cynthiagill.info. And my sister Pam's, I want to highly recommend her books for boys to read, because they are fascinating. Some of them you won't even be able to put down. And that's pamwithers.com, www.pamwithers.com.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show, and your book is great. Thank you so much.
Well, it's very kind of you to say, and I enjoyed it so much. So thank you, Eva, for inviting me.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Right.
Good night.
Okay. Mm-hmm.